Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast. I am your host, Daniel Kubal. Today, I have me a very special guest, Alan Batchelder. Alan, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for coming on today. I wanted to get you on for a while. I absolutely loved Felix's cover that I did for you. So that was one that I saw, bought right away. So I'm excited to get to that one in 2025. I have a massive list ahead of me, but I'm actually really excited. It's pretty varied and you're on it, so it'll be really exciting. But thank you so much for coming on today and, chatting with us about your writing and your books.
Now, thanks for having me. I'm not surprised you have a huge TBR list.
Yeah, I've actually, it's so funny because I had like three authors today. I had one send me book mail a while back and I'm like trying so hard. And that's why I had like I think four people messaged me this morning. I was like, I'm kind of busy. I was like, I'm really trying. I was like, if everybody had, if it was cheaper for everybody to do Audible or audio, it would make my life so much easier because I do Kindle or and sometimes I'm doing like Kindle, Audible, and I don't even mind buying them. And then like the paperback, just to try and get through books quicker. My son's not always conducive to me holding a paperback. He usually wants to be held or something like that or play or whatever. So I've like told everybody, I'm like, I'm trying so hard to get to everybody. And then I'm writing myself. My characters are,
Right.
you know how it is. They're not always listening to what I want, Alan. So if they could also just chill a little bit, it'd make my life easier.
Or cooperate at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they definitely don't want to do that. But thank you so much for coming on today. We'll actually start with that first question there, Alan. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
I have been writing my entire life. I mean, I think you start out as a kid just writing silly stories for yourself and your friends. But then I took a detour. I was a professional actor. I still technically am, but I haven't been on stage in a while. And that was my big calling for a long time. But then, you get older, you have a kid, you have a mortgage and all that. And I ended up teaching. That's my full-time gig. And I write on the side to keep my soul alive, really.
I know that feeling. That is it's so funny you say because I actually just mentioned that to somebody yesterday, and one of my buddies was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I am working on a character chart to try and I just couldn't figure out draft five without it." I was like, had to re-put I'm missing three characters, I found out through JR Wise. He's like, "Yeah, squad doesn't have nine people and the sergeant, bro." He's like, "They have 12 in the sergeant." So I'm like, so I
So
had to like add characters and
you're a
stuff. So
plotter.
I'm usually both, but my thing is like it has been so hard to get into this draft. And I was very lucky that like Logan D. Irons and H.L. Tinsley were like my alpha readers. I just threw it out there and I was thinking my friends were gonna have to do it or something. And then they're like, "Oh, can we?" I'm like, "Please." Like I just read Bridget King's. I'm almost done with actually two of H.L. Tinsley's books. So I was like, "Yes, please." And then I was fortunate enough where Sarah Chorn helped me out for developmental edits because I was in a really big bind and needed direction. So she squeezed me in, which was really nice. But it's like I can't do any. I kept trying to write without. I'm like, I had new characters I had to add before that too. So I was like, oh, I think I'm gonna do this and that, and it just didn't work. So I've literally went and like generated on Adobe Express and Creative Cloud like images for each of the members of the units. And I'm like a visual learner, so I had to like do like little cards for them, like D&D style. And it was just it
Right.
took me like 2 hours yesterday, right? And I didn't really write much, but I got all their descriptions, like so now like I look at the card and just write. But my buddy's like, "Dude, you just spent 2 hours on that after work and you're a dad." I'm like, "What do you do?" I was like, "I need this thing to be out of my soul so I have a soul." So I don't know, I feel that so much. I feel like a lot of
Wow.
people just don't get it. I definitely
I
get
think
that feeling, so
maybe that's where my theater background has been useful for me because I sort of see all of this as if it were on stage or on screen in my mind. So I guess that's how I kind of keep track of it. And everybody has a distinctive voice.
yeah. I find, you ever, I just find like recently, just because it's a new skill that I have to master, is like I can see it all up here and it looks great and everything, but then getting it to sound that way, right? It's hard. I was originally gonna be an illustrator, went to school for it for a while, and I think visually, like it just like helps me out. So as soon as I had, even this like their pictures, I just started to like bust things out. So tonight's gonna be, where I try and finish this up. But now it's nice because like I have different scenes, right? Where I'm visualized who's there, but because I added characters, now I have to like revisualize, if that makes sense. And like put these new characters in, and it's like a TV show where all of a sudden you added three people, and sometimes I'm like, oh, where are they? So one thing that was super helpful was within the squad, I broke it down to three units, and instead of just having their names, I actually put the cards there. So now I can refer back to that. So even if I, just take a picture of the card, I can be like, oh, okay, like Alan, Dan, and these three guys are gonna go, and they're gonna, attack the front of the house, and then these four guys are gonna be in the back. These guys are support or something on the roof above. Like even just doing that, but it was kind of nice because it added a couple of small parts to different scenes, that I think will make it a little bit more full. And that was like the feedback I got and stuff. But I have had to learn to be more of a plotter, and it's definitely been a struggle. So these are, as one of my friends said recently, like growing pains. So I definitely understand if anybody out there has been experiencing the same
So I
thing.
assume you've done the little exercise where you try to cast it as a film or a television series, and I'm going to cast Charlie Hunnam, for
Oh,
example,
yep.
whoever it might be. I've been asked
He's
that
usually in
question.
there somewhere. He's usually in there somewhere for me.
Yeah.
Like, I just love him. So he's usually in there somewhere in the cast. But yeah.
Yeah, as he should be.
I used to write scripts actually, like back in high school. That's actually what I was doing, like my own thing. And then my drama teacher, he got me into writing scripts. I actually sold one. Like, I was about to sell one, and it was like a gritty Punisher kind of thing. With like this veteran Marine who ended up being like a cop, and it was like this whole thing, and he was like, oh, I know, I have a friend, because he used to be an actor, and say so I have a friend, and we went to try it out, and then he's like, yeah, they want to buy it for like $5,000, and I'm like, oh, sweet. I'm like 17 years old. I was like, let's do this thing. He goes, okay. And then he's like, well, let me see their notes, and their notes were like they wanted to change everything, and I was just like, I don't know, like creatively, it didn't stick with me. And I'm sure I should have done it, because I'm sure it would have been a lot better, but 17-year-old hubris, right? And now I'm like, ooh, that wasn't very good stuff. Like I should have just sold it to him. But that was really like, he helped me with a couple other ones. And then that kind of kept me going a little bit
Right.
to college, but yeah, I've never really gotten out of the art or film game, in terms of up here thinking of stuff that way. But I think that's why I like the genre so much, fantasy, urban fantasy, like sci-fi. It's always more exciting than real life, which kind of brings us to our next question. What genres do you currently write in, and why?
Well, my first series, my series, my book series is Grimdark, just because I really like. I mean, you reach a certain age, and noble bright is kind of the opposite, where everyone's good and kind and true and all that stuff. And that's just not a world that I understand or live in. And the stakes don't feel genuine to me. So I just really clicked with Grimdark from the beginning. So I wrote my first book and released it in 2013. Which is before a lot of, modern classics that come up in podcasts like this. But then after that, I wrote a book about Shakespeare.
Oh,
It's
that's
a
cool.
historical fiction horror novel.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he actually ends up having to do battle with Grendel.
Oh, that's
So
amazing. That's
I
awesome.
know. And then the one I just released is a steampunk humor, kind of like Douglas Adams or Terry Pratchett or something. So, I mean, I'm all over the map, and I know that in terms of marketing, I might garner more readers if I lived in a particular niche and that's all I did. But I have all these voices in my head, from years on stage and such, and I just can't sort of limit myself to one. But I'm also a middle school teacher. and I don't want to get fired because it
That's
pays my
fair.
mortgage and my health care. So I also can't go full out, Joe Abercrombie, in some cases. So I'm writing all over the map, and the next one I'm doing, like work in progress, is a an urban fantasy.
Oh, awesome.
Using some characters from Greek mythology, but it's not Greek in the least. Those characters are there, but it's very much very contemporary.
Well, that sounds awesome. You said a lot of things there that I actually connect a lot with. And I just talked to this with a couple authors recently on here where they're like, yeah, and a couple people I think disagree with me, which it's like, if you're out to make money, like I get it. But my thing is, like, as a new author, I'm like, same thing. Like, I love urban fantasy. I'm much better at writing fantasy, so I'm keeping some of that stuff aside. I have a lot of things I could just finish up the next several years. I could probably go full time at some point, just releasing fantasy stuff. But I really like urban fantasy, so I was like, well, I want to do something that's hard, and that's why this little novella, like 30,000 words, is crushing me, because I'm like, if it was a fantasy book, it'd be like 80,000, I'd be done. I can just keep, going. But I totally get it. The appeal to me is like the characters, right? Like, I got like a minor. He's like kind of like Mal, like, right? Nathan Fillion. And I don't know. But instead of them being like the rogues, they're like space miners, and a whole bunch of cool stuff happens. I'm like, oh, I kind of want to write that. I like, I love Blade Runner. I love mystery noir, and I love the sci-fi aspect of it. So I kind of want to do something like that, and I don't know. I find it really difficult to trying to stay into one genre. I'm trying to stay in urban fantasy for a while, like a little while, but I also have some fantasy stuff. My friend's like, are you going to be able to not release it, like relatively soon? And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I'll just do like some novellas until, the bigger stuff's done for each. But I don't know. I've seen some people, be successful, particularly before they've gotten like 5 to 7 books out, right? Like, and they've started to have a name for themselves, and then some people will try something in either genre. I kind of think it's nice to kind of, if you can, like, enter both genres. And people always ask me, why are you doing novellas first? They're cheaper, and they're a lot quicker. So I have like 6 that I have. I have 3 here, 3 here. So I figure if I release those, and then maybe people like them or something. Who knows? But I always find it more interesting to get the characters, that I want to write, and they want to be told in multiple genres. So I
Yeah,
totally understand.
and the other thing is there's an appeal to demonstrating that you have a broader range
I
and broader
agree.
voice yourself, than being a one-trick pony and writing the same thing your whole. I want to show people that I can, pull out compelling stories in all different genres. I got pretty far into a horror novel that I'll have to resume after I retire, because that one's definitely something that my students' parents would object to, so it's gonna have to wait 4 years or so. But I'm interested in all different stories and all different kinds of issues, and so I don't want to be the grimdark guy, and besides, we already have a Lord Grimdark. And I don't want to be the Shakespeare guy or I just want to tell my stories.
Now, you said you mentioned, Greek, but not quite Greek, So I think it's always interesting with urban fantasy. Like, so within my urban fantasy world, I have like Heracles or Hercules for the Romans, right? But I have like the person. I liked R.R. Verdi and I, we talked about the origin of stories. And as a history teacher, I talk about that all the time. I talk about Gilgamesh and how probably, where Samson and Hercules came from, right? This strong guy, or Enkidu, or one of them, So I'm like, well, what if there was like a really strong guy that was like immortal or whatever, and he just put on these different faces at different times from history. So I'm like, at some point I have to write like a Heracles, like, or
Well,
put him into my world, at some point, and they pass. I love Men in Black. So I have like the company, so they're gonna be in there at some point. I have like a
right.
Valkyrie, I'm like, I have like an Avengers style ensemble that's going to come together at some point in urban fantasy, which there's just so many cool things. So when you said that, I was like, oh, I totally get that, because I think it's fun to see where the origins of those stories come from and to do something a little unique, right? Not just your contemporary Greek
Well,
or Edwardian or.
I also like the kind of murky origins. You know, I grew up in the
Yeah.
70s, and we were watching Bruce Lee and Yojimbo and Clint Eastwood, Man with No Name, and my dad was reading Conan the Barbarian. And with my first series, my protagonist, I wanted him to be like that. I wanted him to be somebody who was a phenom in terms of speed and intuition and ability and stuff. And yet he's a real bastard, you know, he's incredibly arrogant. And there are rumors and myths and folk tales about him that go f much farther back than makes any sense. And so a big part of the arc of his story over five novels is like, who is this guy really, and where does he come from? And it's not the obvious answer that I think everyone would be reaching for. It's a little more complicated than that. But yeah, I'm very much attracted to the same sort of origin thing. I kind of talked a little bit about question number three already. This thing of darkness,
Oh, perfect.
as a Shakespearean actor, I eventually ran afoul of this whole authorship question. Did Shakespeare write Shakespeare's plays?
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and I battled with people for decades about it. And one of the big stories is it's Christopher Marlowe and he faked his own death. No, it's the Earl of Oxford and he faked his own death. And I said,
The Duchess.
okay, guys, what if Shakespeare faked his own death? I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So Shakespeare fakes his own death. What does he do? Where does he go? And he travels to the Jamestown colony in the New World. You know, the Jamestown colony, infamous for cannibalism and insanity and mass murder and stuff like that. And he ends up having to battle Grendel. So it's incredibly dark. Actually, Shakespeare pops up in ways large and small in all of my books, but in many of them, it's so subtle you wouldn't notice. So I've kind of just sort of intertwined or reversed. I talked about Immortal Treachery a little bit with you a second ago.
Oh, that's fine.
And it has a black company element as well. I mean,
I love that.
I can't think of anyone, who writes fantasy today who wasn't enamored with that whole series, But my little troop of guys are bumbling, imbeciles. It's like if Monty Python were the black company.
Think that is the Black Company.
Well, yeah.
They are pretty, pretty elite, but at times they are very Monty Python-esque,
Yeah.
which I think is why I love them so much. But yeah.
Yeah, so I guess I dwell more in the humor side than like Abercrombie's versions, end up having lots and lots of sex, for example, and that again, middle school teacher, I can't write lots and lots of sex in my books. It's hinted at, but that's as far as I can go.
Well, it's funny, like I was just gonna ask, like, for this thing of darkness, so I'm just curious, like, are there any other types of mythological figures or historical that you think might you might want to do something else with like that? Because that's just such a cool mashup. I never would have thought Shakespeare, Grendel, and Jamestown.
Well,
As soon as I
actually,
read the
yeah.
blurb for that one, I was like, oh, that's my kind of book. And then I saw Felix's cover. I was like, this is definitely my kind of book.
Well, I've
So.
had people ask me, when am I going to write the sequel? And I have one in mind, but I mean, frankly, it needs to do a little better in terms of sales. But my current book, I was telling you about the Greek characters. It's one of Medusa's sisters and Polyphemus, who's blinded by Ulysses, right? So a blind Cyclops and a Medusa. But they've been together for thousands of years, and now they're in present day Seattle. And it's a little bit like the Dresden Files, but not as horny.
Oh my
Because
God, yeah, I got
the
that one book
main
eight.
character is a woman. What's one of Medusa's sisters? And they They have a business called Hammer and Nails. It's a construction and demolition business in downtown Seattle. But it's really a front because their actual business is revenge. They get hired to kill the perpetrators of sexual violence.
Oh, okay.
But in the first book here, they're going to run afoul of a local baddie called Mr. Sodium. Anyways, it's a long story, but Poseidon doesn't appear in the story. Zeus doesn't appear in the story. They're just sort of thrown together by fate and happenstance, and they've been together forever, and they're just trying to eke out a living. And the Cyclops in particular enjoys, destruction and killing people and such. And this seems like a kosher way of doing it. These are bad people that they hunt down anyway, and eliminate. So it's not really a victimless crime, but it's justifiable, I think, in the eyes of some people. So it's going to have a lot of the same sort of intrigue as the Dresden Files, but a different direction.
Oh, it's interesting. I have like a crew of ogres, but like they're not real ogres. All my mythological beings come from like another like dimension or planet, really is what it is. And they come from the other. And then there are some things in my urban fantasy world that just come from here. But if they don't come from here, they can only be harmed from things from like their like planet, kind of like black kryptonite. But it's fun, like for me with history. And that's what like excites me about what you're saying. Like I have ogres. Well, they have like an overlord. These overlords that essentially have enslaved them and like have literally made them like their personal like elite bodyguards. So way back like 40,000 years ago, they come here, and that's where like the Cataclysm or Atlantis or all that. I like to do a lot of different things, but it's just interesting because when you're talking about them, like I think of them like my ogres, where my ogres have certain abilities and things, but they end up getting left here. And then for a long time over history, right, you have the Fae and Cyclops, things like that, or other they're the a lot of the myths about those kind of beings that used to fight humans or giants and stuff. And then eventually one of their powers is like they can actually like turn like shapeshift. But my good guys can actually like in these monster hunting clans, which is actually where my character Nathaniel Wither, who's like a Marine veteran, he joins a monster hunting clan like in present day. But that clan actually was formed back then. They can actually like sense when they change shape. So they get stuck in human form for a while or different forms. Otherwise they're hunted down. So it's funny that you say that because like I'm like, okay, what would an ogre who like a group of ogres over time, like what would they feel or think, right? Like they used to hate humans, but eventually they come to rely on them. And then eventually like, oh, actually we were programmed a certain way. And now they're deprogramming themselves. And I like that whole deconstructing your programming theme. So I'm going to use them to do it. But that's an exciting story that you're telling me because that's very something similar to what I like to read and what I like to write. So that sounds awesome to me because I would love to see how you write those two characters, particularly in present day, particularly non-human characters. I always think of that
Right.
like I just think that's it's just in, it's an interesting question to solve, right? Like my main guy's name is Arthur, and he actually ironically has a couple of origins from some of those tales around King Arthur. And he actually takes the name Arthur because of the guy he met, King Arthur, like way back when, or the legend that came from it. So I just think it's always so cool to see how people take mythology and take different things. And I always think like, what if those creatures were still around? And what if they had to hide with us? Or what if they had to, I think that's always cool about the Dresden Files or Patricia Briggs or Kevin Hearn. I think that's what fascinates me really. One of the main things about urban fantasy is seeing how authors like you take those different ideas and create something, a newer tale, particularly using those origins and things like that. I think it's just, it's cool. It's almost like you're doing brain surgery or taking somebody else's recipe and coming up with, something, a new dish completely your own. So I always think those kind of things are fascinating.
And I think it's partially wondering too. Like we have the stories, but we don't have like what happens the next day. Like what happens to Polyphemus after he gets his eye poked out, you know? I'm directing Midsummer Night's Dream right now, and
Oh, awesome.
I was thinking about Bottom, you know, this guy who gets turned into a jackass, and I was thinking like what would he be like in the present day, you know? Like survived this. He's been infected with immortality by the Fae, and just and what would he how would he encounter the world knowing what he knows now and seeing through the veil, you know? So I think part of it is just, you know, the young kid in us when back when we were kids, and then what? And then what? And then what? And then what? And so many of our stories end, but not for you and me, clearly, because we want to know. What happened to that person? What happens to, and Grendel can't be the only one of his species. I mean, he had a mother, right? Who mated with her? You know, like there have to be Grendels in the world. And are they connected to, you know, Wendigos or Sasquatch or your ogres or,
That's
you know,
that's what was fun. My friend mentioned that. I was like, "Oh, Grendel." I was like, he goes, "That could be where Grendel came from." I was like, oh, or Bigfoot or whatever. I was like, "Oh, that's good." Yeah, that's what's so fun, I think. But like, that's like you're saying this too. And I'm thinking like with Hercules or Heracles, whatever. Thinking like Samson too, right? From the Bible, like with the judge. Like I'm like, there had to have been somebody, right? Even if it was like the Rocks version, right, where he's just a great warrior and a big dude. It's like, to me, it's always fascinating. It's like, where did these things come from? And I always think like, okay, then add, that's what I always am thinking as a historian, right? Is, and that's like R.R. Verdi and I talked a lot about, you know, the first binding is like, where did these stories originate from? Why? And then what if they were real? What if they were immortal? How, like I have to know as a writer and a reader, I have to get this story out and figure out what Hercules would be like today. You know, like watching, like would he have joined in World War II and fought the Nazis, you know? Like those are questions that I absolutely have to answer, you know, and figure out at some point. 'Cause I think it'd be absolutely fascinating, you know, to see. That's why I like Patricia Briggs so much. Like Mercy's brother, her like, yeah, I'm totally blanking. Charles, not Charles, I'm blanking on his name, but anyways. He is just like fascinating. Like he fought in World War I, did some stuff in World War II. Atticus, Iron Druid Chronicles, Kevin Hearn, he helped to ferry Jewish people back and forth, you know, and used his powers for good, around these vampires and stuff who helped run the Nazis. I mean, it's just like makes you think all these very interesting things. And I don't know, it's absolutely fascinating to think what if, and then to put a little, you know, a little bit of magic or sci-fi in there. I think it's always really cool, but. That's really awesome, though. I think all of us know what we have to do. Okay, we have to go and buy this Thing of Darkness, review it, and blow it up so that we get, you know, book two. So,
You know,
challenge
it's funny
accepted,
though.
Alan.
Thank you. It's funny though, because you write something like that. I knew it was a niche book when I wrote it, but I wrote it for me. But it's won all these awards, and I've been promoting it to Shakespeare festivals. I just thought it would do better. You know, nobody has panned it. Nobody has said anything other than, you know, but and I'm sure you have books like this or other authors that you've had on. For
Oh, for
one reason,
sure.
they have a book that they love, and for some reason, it's just not. Maybe it's my description on an Amazon page, which I've tried to rewrite, but it won't accept my
Oh,
rewrite.
that's weird. Oh, it's interesting. I actually liked it. The blurb and everything. Like that actually sold me because I actually didn't I remember I just remember I read the blurb before like I saw the cover of the book. I don't know how that happened. I don't know if I like you know, somebody shared your blurb or
Well,
something like that.
Felix
It might
made
have
the
been
cover,
Felix. Yep.
but he also
Maybe it was
made.
like the upcoming cover or something like that. But I know I read the blurb before seeing the cover, and then I was like, oh, well, that's two times something my thing. But yeah, I thought that I don't know. It garnered my attention right away. I am kind of weird though, because as a writer and a reader, like I want to see something. I like the niche stuff. I want to see, you know, different subgenres put together. I really. You know, that's why I like indie. I want to see something like that. I want to see I want to see William Shakespeare go up against Grendel in Jamestown. Like, I have to see that. Like, that's my thing, you know? So I totally get you there. I sometimes it's weird though, you know, like how certain niche books, I do think it's luck, the algorithm, and just plugging away. You know, it's like that's like this podcast. Like, I've had like literally over 1,000 authors contact me within this last year. But you know, to get to 1,000 subscribers, it's like it feels like I'm just, you know, inching and clawing. Like, I had 143 subscribers within, you know, like the last 4 months, something crazy. Like, I think it was even shorter. And but like the amount of work that took, it was just like it was absolutely crazy. Every time my kid was asleep, you know, I was like posting something, doing something.
Yeah.
And then I was like, got to past 500. I was like, okay. And I thought it was gonna be a little easier because you're gonna get to 500, the algorithm is supposed to help. And it's like, oh my God. I'm like, if every single author or creative that wanted to be on the show just subscribe, like then I would get to a point where I'd have to do more interviews,
Well,
you
I
know.
subscribed a long, long ago. So.
You know, I appreciate it. I'm just, but it's like it's the same thing though, right? Like I buy books all the time. My wife's like, what are you doing? We went recently and you know, I could go buy a $20 paperback, which I don't have a lot of room in my house. Or I could buy like, you know, whatever, like 10, 20 books, depending on, you know, when I'm buying them. So that's my thing now is like, my friend's like, your Kindle's ridiculous. I was like, well, even if I don't get to it, I was like, at least I bought it from a friend, you know, who's,
Right.
you know, at least that helps. I said, I review everything. I said, it might take me a while, you know, so, but I review everything, you know, I try and post it everywhere. I actually just read Troy Denning's The Sentinel, one of the Forgotten Realms books for The Sundering. It's like a series of six. They had six different authors. They
I think
each
I
took one
just saw the
book.
cover of that on
Yeah,
Facebook.
oh my God. Cleef was so. Now, talk about Noble Bright, right? At first, I was like, oh, he's gonna be Noble Bright, but he really wasn't. He was meant to be, but he wasn't. And Troy wrote this character with so many ins and outs. Like, it was super cool. And I like fell in love with the character. And I think it's because, like you said, right? It's where I'm at here at life, you know? And I'm like, I get it. He's really bitter and doesn't believe the system is working the way it's supposed to. He's tired of working within it. I think we can both, you know, feel that a little bit. So it was super, super cool. But yeah, but that's like, you know, it's so interesting to, you know, to see books like that, right? Where, you know, I always thought that Forgotten Realms was everything, right? And everybody read them and stuff. And then I'll share something and people will be like, oh, I didn't even know that all 600 of those books existed.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel good, you know, with different niche stuff too. You know, like it just takes like one post for somebody, you know, to see something and, you know, for it to be shared. So that's why I do this podcast. That's why we try and do stuff, you know, with the group or, you know, the social media. Cause I think you're just, I always think, right, you're only one click away. And I always think like, if I share this or, you know, share this thing of darkness, you know, it only takes that one time on TikTok, right? Where, you know, 10,000 people see it and all of a sudden it's a bestseller. I've seen people do that on, you know, a lot of different platforms. So I always just keep interviewing or sharing stuff or reading or reviewing stuff and, you know, trying to plug away. But I just want one time where I do something and it blows somebody up. Like
Yeah.
that would just be like
The
totally,
right
totally
person,
true.
the right person sees it or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, they don't tell you or somebody should warn writers, you know, the percentage of time you spend trying to market yourself.
Yep.
I every single day when I could be writing. And the other thing is I take kind of a Barnum and Bailey approach. You know, I was a comedian for 9 or 10 years, and
Oh, awesome.
so on TikTok, my posts aren't always about books at all. They're just completely ludicrous. They're the most ridiculous things I can come up with, hoping they'll go viral. But you know, I have the wrong kind of cleavage, I
My beard gets in the way, so I get that,
No,
Alan.
I'm not getting the clicks on TikTok.
I think it's hard on there though. Like, I mean, I was like trying for a while. People were like, oh, just do three times or do this. So the same. I was like, I was trying for a while there. I was like 3 times a day. I was putting up, you know, like, and it took, like you said, it took a lot of work. I was finally back to like 250 views for each video or whatever. I was like doing, but like authors you should have read, or books you should have read. And it was, I mean, it was like, it was a ton of work just to get back to like 220, and it wasn't even like per video. And I did it literally for like probably like 2 weeks straight, and it was just like it just like wasn't working. I think I've done more on Blue Sky within a week than I have
Yeah.
on TikTok or X within like my author one's been blowing up. So I've been trying to relate it back to the podcast. I double, you know, do everything on there. The algorithm's definitely picking up on there. So I hope we can get back to like 3 years ago because man, was Twitter amazing. I
Yeah.
would put this on there. I'd get like 250 views easy on just one platform, just like on YouTube. And then as soon as they changed that algorithm, before Mustbot, I mean, it was just like it just tanked. And now it's like I'm just picking up the scraps on everything now. People are like, why are you interviewing people? I'm like, I just enjoy hanging out with people.
I had 3,500 followers on Twitter, and I think I've got 150 on Blue Sky. And I think I confuse the algorithm because I love to chat about politics, but I also talk about my books, you know, and it's hard to confine yourself to an algorithm,
Yeah,
you know.
totally. Yep. I was actually going to disagree with somebody on Facebook today about, they're like, oh, I think if you switch platforms, it's just like if you need to, that you're not feeding your algorithm. And I was like, I like typed a whole thing. I was like, absolutely disagree with you. I absolutely disagree with you because I am nothing but books, book marketing, book reviews. And like, it has been absolutely hard for me except for Facebook. I mean, Facebook has blown up. I can literally, can like your like page or whatever, and that algorithm will hit me right every time. But TikTok, Instagram, Threads, it's just so difficult. And it's like, that's pretty much all I do, And I do it on purpose, right? I like, I share, I favorite on TikTok, and they'll still just send me the most random crap. I'm just like, these algorithms are, then you
Yeah.
think, right? You have to swim through that crap, Alan, right? Like to market your
Yeah.
book. It's like, no wonder, we're having struggles here, because at the end of the day, that money, gets you that algorithm, a lot easier nowadays because everybody switched about 3 years ago, and that's the thing is I'm like, I just can't do that. I got books to get out. So yeah, I think that's where, for me personally, I'm like, I could do much better talking to somebody, or I can do much better in person. Like there, we, my buddies and I, we're like ready to go. I got a sublimation printer here at school. I'm like, got a new logo for my Monster Hunter series and that universe coming, with my artist this week or next week. I'm like, I'm about to just, make some cheap stuff. Like I could do stickers and things. I'm like, I'd rather go to a show, and pass stuff out with a QR code, and try to go physically sell. My mom and dad are both salespeople, so. I sell kids on their education all the time. I'm like, I think I'll do better at shows, or just putting a table down somewhere, or getting whole
Yeah.
libraries or something. Because I do think the algorithm's hard. And like you said, right? It's a lot of other time, you could be spending writing. So I think I might save my money for that, because I meet a lot of people that way. And I think it's just so much easier, to talk to somebody this way and, to make a sale or to sell them, on, what you were trying to do with a series or, or a book. And that's why I like doing the podcast, because I'll have people message me and be like, hey, buy Alan's book. I'm like, awesome. Go buy the rest of them and tell your friends.
Yeah.
Like, easier that way. But I'm curious though, like how you actually came up with the idea for this thing of darkness. Like, you just like really like Shakespeare, I understand, but like how did that really come about though?
Well, I teach middle school social studies, so I teach a lot about Jamestown, and it's a fascinating time and place. I mentioned kind of in passing the starving time. A few people got eaten, you know, and at one point they were poisoning themselves with salt water or something, and there may have been the bubonic plague, and very it's just a fa and in my book you're there for the introduction of the first slaves in
Oh, interesting.
May of 1619.
Oh, wow.
Shakespeare sees this happening. There are other events in the story, the beginning of the House of Burgesses and stuff. So I was really fascinated with that. But I've always believed that if Shakespeare could fake his death and travel the world, eventually he would end up in the Americas, right? Because the Tempest is set in Bermuda,
Yeah,
and
yeah,
in
yeah.
Comedy of Errors, he talks about the Americas. And he was just, if he was, he was an incredibly curious guy, just like an
I feel like you'd have to
voracious.
see the new world. Yeah. I feel
Yeah.
like you'd have to see the new world. Yeah.
Sure. And then he gets there, and, you know, he has to deal with these paranoid settlers and the Native Americans, the Powhatan. And you know, what else is out there in that vast forest that's never known an axe? You know, nobody's ever cut down the forest, nobody's ever burned down the forest. It's who knows what's out there, and
Yeah,
that's where I just sort of went off the rails and had him run afoul of Grendel. It still lives in my mind, and like I said, I do have a sequel in plan. I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to write all the books I have
Oh,
in
I
my mind.
feel you.
People always go, "Where do you get your ideas?" Or, "I can't come up with an idea." But I've got too many ideas. I just can't.
Totally agree. Yeah. Even if I was full time, I wouldn't have enough time to do that. I have to eat, sleep, you know, like.
I would give anything for that, though, because as a teacher, you probably feel sometimes like you're not making a difference, or you wonder if you're making a difference, and will anybody remember you, and what's it all for? But if I could just work on and tell my stories full time, that would be amazing,
Yep. No, totally. That's what my friend, I think I'm in that like sweet spot right now where I'm at a new school after last year and we're like got in the right position for stuff I was supposed to do and not just with class, but like I'm helping to rebuild this program for the state. And it's just like I'm in that sweet spot where it's like I'm having a blast. Like I know every day I'm doing a lot. You know, I met a lot of kids that I helped the last like 10 years, you know, the last 3 years. Actually, just had one. She just bought a car. Look, she's worked so hard. And I'm like, a lot of people are like, oh, congrats. But I know, you know what I mean, how hard she's worked towards that. And my friend, my wife or two, they were like, I think you're losing your eye of the tiger a little bit. You know, they're like, you're just like in that sweet spot with work, you know, and doing too much. They're like, at some point, you know, you got to get back to, you know, what you want to do too. And I'm like, no, that's fair. But yeah, because I enjoy what I do a lot at this point because a lot of things I had to do in the past, I was like, this is horrible. So this is a much better like place for me, and I'm enjoying it. But I think that's twofold, right? Because then I think I go home and I'm like play with my kid. I'm like, yeah, I'll write tomorrow. But now I'm like, no. I'm like, I have to write today because again, like you said, I got too many things to do, right? And I think it'd be the easy thing. I'm not good at doing the easy thing. The easy thing would be just to let somebody else do it or whatever. But yeah, I think that's a twofold trap for an educator. Is even if you are happy, you're like, oh, I don't really have to get out of this. I don't really have
Well,
to do this. But I think it has to
also
be.
it sounds like you're a born creator. I mean, that's what
Yeah.
you were meant to do.
Yep.
I'm an educator kind of by happenstance, and I try hard and I try to do my best work, but I was creating things from the time I was in kindergarten,
Yeah.
I still do it in every aspect of my life, and I feel like it's what I'm meant to do. But again,
Yeah.
you have to pay the mortgage, you have to have health care, you have to meet other responsibilities.
Yeah. Makes you wish for like that old school like patronage, right? Like Patreon's great, but you
Oh,
just want to go
yeah,
to somebody.
where's my sugar mama?
Yeah. You're like, where's Count so and so or Duke or Duchess? Like, pay me to
I've
do this.
actually figured out a good side gig for myself. I'm going to have my own reality show called I'm Naked, You're Afraid. And
That's awesome.
people pay me to put my clothes on. I think that could be pretty lucrative.
That's awesome. I got to make sure that we talk more about your Immortal Treachery series. Because man, those were some where I was just like, bye, 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 bye. Like as soon as I saw this Thing of Darkness, whatever he had out, I was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna buy this. But I definitely want to talk more about that. Just about the series in general, and why should readers pick that, up that series?
Well, first of all, it's a complete series. It's five books, and it also has won a
You hear
bunch of
that, you book snobs?
it's also won a bunch of awards, the first book in particular. And it's about the protagonist is this guy I told you, he's got a nebulous history that doesn't really match up with the facts, and he's mercurial, he doesn't give a shit, about he just does what he wants. But he gets kind of manipulated by the queen, this old kind of Queen Elizabeth the First type character, into doing her bidding for a while. And over the five books, there's really a cast of 1,000 characters. There's one guy in their little Black Company troupe. He's an actor and he can only sword fight when he's spouting iambic pentameter. If he
That's
stops, he
awesome.
doesn't, you know. And then there's a hardcore drunk. And then there's this massive brawler guy. He's just like, he's almost a giant. And there is a giant. There's a female giant who falls in love with one of the characters. And you know, there's tragedy, there's comedy. It's just huge and sprawling, very much in some ways inspired by Steven Erikson and maybe a little bit by Abercrombie, but also just, I mean, I grew up, Wagner's Ring. My parents would drag me to that thing every year,
Oh,
and I ended up being in it at one point.
that's cool.
Yeah, so there's it's kind of like Siegfried and the
Yeah,
then there's Conan the Barbarian. There's just all these influences, but really what it's about through the five books is who is the protagonist? Who is Tarman Vikers and why does he do what he does? I mean, at one point, and out of context, this is going to sound ridiculous, but he kills an entire city.
oh,
Everyone in it, men, women, and children. But if we're going to forgive Anakin Skywalker for killing all the younglings,
wow.
blowing up a planet, and then allowing him to rejoin the good side of the force. And there are huge Lovecraftian monsters, and there are, little tiny fae the size of your thumbnail. And it's just my shot at a sprawling, grimdark epic. And one of the questions is if you could choose one of your books to be a New York Times bestseller, I would definitely choose Steel, Blood, and Fire. Because that's the first book in the series. And if they caught on, and early on, I had an inquiry from an agency in Beverly Hills asking
Oh.
if it was available. And I said, hell yes. And I never heard
You're
again.
like, I'm a
So,
teacher, dude.
yeah. Well, that's the other thing. When I was young, I used to draw a lot, and I would give people drawings as gifts, and they say, how can you do that? And I'd say, well, if I really have the art in me, I can always make another one or something better. So I'm not married to, artistic pretension. Oh, you can't buy the option for screenplay because you're going to butcher my story. No, I'll write another one. I'll write a different series. I'll write, I guess I'm more pragmatic
As
than.
somebody that wish you had that 5 grand now.
Yeah,
If
no, really. I
I
mean,
could, well, here's my thing, is not even that, right? Like, and I was talking to some kids, and I said, here's my thing, because they ask me all the time, like, because they know, they're like, oh, I want to do hybrid. So I was like, I want some stuff over here. No one will ever touch my Legends of Uma series. It's my baby, and I want to make all the decisions. I have a bunch of other stuff. I have a parallel fantasy world. Feel free, right? You want to come, writing it with me, like, feel free, right? That's my sandbox for that kind of stuff. And then I got a whole bunch of other stuff. This is my baby. Nobody touching my baby. But other than that, I'm like, yeah, let's do it, they asked me recently, like, well, would you go back in time and change that? I was like, I would. And you want to know why? Because I would have had established credits, right? And I definitely think I could have sold some other stuff, and just for like the experience alone, I think would have been really, really cool. And particularly at that time, the CW and a bunch of other people were doing the vigilante stuff, because that was way before Arrow and stuff. It was like Smallville had just come off, or was coming off and stuff. So I'm like, gosh darn it, because you just never know what they could have turned it into. So I definitely wish, if there was one thing I could do. Herman Stuernagel asked me that on his podcast, The Greatest Podcast in the Multiverse. And I thought about it after, because I listened to all of his interviews, and I was like, oh, that would actually, because when I was on there twice, I was like, oh, I would do this instead. But now I'm like, no, that's what I would change. I would go back and change this one thing just to see, what would happen differently. Because I think it would have given me the confidence earlier, or maybe the drive, to make, to establish writing different things earlier. So yeah, I definitely feel you there. Now the teacher's salary, I'm like, oh, it would have been nice to have that, that just the credit, not even the money, but the credit, right? To kind of build off that writing credit today. So I highly recommend that to people. Don't recommend you getting screwed over. I've had a lot of people on here who probably told me, like, They've gotten screwed over. Rob J. Hayes is not shy about that with his first book series and stuff. I know he's got the rights back now, but
He's doing
definitely wish
okay.
for them. Yeah. Just keep writing. That's what everybody says, right? But those New York Times bestsellers would be great for everybody. So I wish that upon everybody, like you, Alan. So.
I'm amazed at the speed with which some of these guys can, like
Oh my
C.P.
gosh. Yep.
Phipps, Charles Phipps, man, that guy must crank out a book every 2 weeks. I don't know how he does it. It takes
No, man,
me
just talk.
a year, and sometimes if things aren't going right in the world, 2 years to get a book out. So.
No, I totally feel that. Just because you brought it up earlier, so I want to make sure we talk about this. What is your book, Goat Musing Whimsy, about? And how did this book come to pass? Just sounds awesome.
Well, actually, many years ago, I was teaching. I'm doing it now too, but a middle school I English class, and I gave them a writing prompt. I said, "Okay, 10-minute writing prompt. What would you do if you woke up one morning and you were a goat?" The more I thought about that over the years, the more I thought, "God, that's a really interesting story." I mean, anything could be a story. When my son was, your son's age, I used to have to make up two or three brand new stories a night, and we called them Edward stories. And so I just got, and sometimes I'd be so exhausted. I go, once upon a time there was a doorknob, and this doorknob was very, very lonely because, and so I had to be a pantser three times a night, years. I also love the ridiculous melodramatic language of some Dickens. And so in this one, it's written in a very self-conscious, "Dear reader, I entreat you to believe," but it's very tongue in cheek. It's one gag after another. I mean, imagine, I don't want to give too much away, but goats have kind of an appetite, a sexual appetite, and a literal appetite. And so he gets into all kinds of hijinks just trying to figure out how the hell this happened to him and how can he go back to being human. And he discovers there are other creatures and inanimate objects in town that have had this happen to them too. So he befriends a hat rack, a talking hat rack, and there's a giant boulder, and they all hang out together and they unravel this really sprawling, idiotic conspiracy by a bunch of bald men who are trying to take over the anyway. So it's just a lark, like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's meant to also demonstrate a different side of me, because when there's humor, there's plenty of humor in Immortal Treachery, and there's some humor in This Thing of Darkness, but I didn't get to just be flat out balls to the wall, shamelessly ridiculous. And that's what this is for. And then the books that follow will be 180 degrees. Originally, I was working on that mass murder horror story, and that would have been completely 180 degrees different. But of course, that's going to have to wait till after I'm retired from teaching middle schoolers.
Hey, I
So
saw
it's,
Alan on the news.
yeah. So it's going to be my story about Polyphemus and Medusa's sister, Hammer and Nails. That'll be the next one.
Awesome. Well, I just had to bring that up because I saw that on your Facebook like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, that's just is really cool. So I gotta ask this question before we get to our last one. So which of your characters has been the most challenging to write and why?
This is going to blow your mind for its stupidity, but do you remember the Jean-Claude Van Damme commercial a few years ago where he's between two Mack
Oh, I
trucks
do. I
and
show it for my enterprise class and or sometimes economics because it was just so bizarre, but it did a great job. Like you're like have to watch the commercial. Like,
yeah, and I thought to myself, because I started watching that guy at the beginning of his career, and I watched all movies, and he's not a great actor, et cetera, et cetera. But it was such a cool kind of leaving the stage moment. This is what I've done in my career, and this is where I've arrived, and now I'm, and it inspired the ending for the final book in my Immortal Treachery series. You know, I
Oh,
thought,
interesting.
how does Tarman Vikers, after he's done all of these impossible feats, how does he leave the stage? You know, and the book's called The End of All Things, and so it's not a big secret of how things go. So that it was hard to let go of him, you know, hard to live with him for 5 or 7 years and finally say goodbye, you know, because he's my Conan the Barbarian. He's my, you know, Drizzt or whoever your favorite, you know, Carsa Orlong or Anamander Rake. And if you haven't had that experience, you know, you will someday, letting go of and saying goodbye to your favorite or your original protagonist, you know, and trying to give them a suitable end. It almost brings tears to your eyes in a weird way, you know, like if Clint Eastwood had ever had to make a movie where that character dies, you know, which is unthinkable to us, right? I mean, we never saw that guy. He was all.
Well, there was one movie, and I was like, my dad and I was like, it felt like, because I have seen so many Clint Eastwood movies with my dad and
Unforgiven?
my grandpa. I wasn't. Why'd you have to bring that up? I wasn't even thinking that. Ouch. I was thinking of Gran Torino, actually. More towards like the end of like his acting career, and we kind of felt like it was all
Oh
these other characters, and then
where he pulls the
that was like that for me and my dad. Like we watched that together. That hit hard because, like I said, my grandpa got him into Clint Eastwood, got me into Clint Eastwood. And then he passed years ago, so then that was like our thing. And then when that happened, that I don't know, that movie just like it hit different for both of us, especially watching at the same time. And it was almost like my grandpa was then gone, if that makes sense. Like I don't know, it was just like we were talking about a character, right? Like, and it wasn't even an overarching character. It was just like
It's not even
his
the
role.
same character, but
That role just got us both with the end. I mean, it
did
was just like, yeah, it was
it did
crazy.
feel like the end of an era, didn't it?
That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, and
But
so
and then
that's
we
the
put on
hard
the good, the
thing.
bad, and the ugly again, I think is what we did. That too. Yeah, I totally get that. I like, well, even not even like a main character, but like the main character. But thank you, Bob Salvatore, for ruining my life and getting rid of a couple characters. I'm not up to date now. I think there's like 14 or 15 books again. But yeah, he did a couple things that definitely balled some of my tears. I was like, I had some characters that I had grown up with, and I was like, how could you do this to me, Bob? And I actually messaged at one point. I was like, I literally cried. I was like, these two books, like back to back. I was like, how could you do this? And one character in particular, I was just like, why, Bob? Why? And he's like, I am so sorry. But he's like, that makes me feel good that you were that devastated. I was like, it was like one of my best friends like passed away, So I could only imagine, being him. He told me it's like it was not easy, with any of the characters, but particularly that character. And it wasn't Dritz, but it was pretty up there. So yeah, I totally could understand that. So I can't imagine being on, this side of the computer, having to write that kind of story for a character that's been with you that long. So
Well,
that's
you'll
like
get
30
there.
years for him. So 30 years from now. Sorry, Nathaniel. Got a couple of them. But yeah, that's a great answer. So I know we're wrapping up on time here, Al. Just want to make sure, we have enough time to talk about any news updates or current projects you can share with us. I know we talked about a little, but sometimes people come, like I said, at the end. So if you could just recap that for us, that'd be great.
Well, first I have the 5 book series we talked about, Immortal Treachery. I've got the Shakespeare historical fiction slash horror. That's This Thing of Darkness, and Goat is my stab at a comic novel, and I'm working on something called Hammer and Nails, which brings Polyphemus, the Cyclops, blinded by Ulysses, and one of Medusa's sisters together. You know, so. If, She can't be looked at, and he's blind, so they make a good.
Perfect match.
I forgot to tell you that she has a side business selling lifelike statuary, but that's a
Oh,
different
that's
thing.
amazing. That's awesome.
But I'm also working on, you know, as you are, as everybody is, I'm going to do an anthology of short horror stories.
Oh, cool.
And I'm looking to participate in more anthologies too. I'm in a couple that CT Phipps edited, but I've got stories, and I have one where a Republican senator gets slapped invisibly. It's called The Slap. And the next thing he hears is the next time will be harder. And this happens at him at irregular intervals. And he starts to go insane, and it's happening in public. And
That's
eventually,
terrifying.
you know, after several weeks, he's wheelchair bound. He can barely move, but he's gotten some really great news. He's going to be a grandfather. And then he gets smacked again, and or he hears "Prepare yourself," which is the setup. And that's how the story ends. So, I mean, I've got a bunch of short horror stories. And they're silly as well as frightening. So lots to write about, lots to share, but not a lot of time to get it all done in. That's my big complaint.
I like purposely set up my schedule. I had somebody ask me earlier. I was like, they're like, can you do this? And I was like, after February, I was like, not really. I was like, I have one slot a week open. I'm getting this whole year done by February. So I was like, my work schedule's changing. I had a class get taken from high school, and then they're actually that's where we're at a college. They'll have a college professor instead, which I'm excited because I'm teaching. I have no break. I have a 30-minute lunch, but it was like we were constrained, and the kids
Yeah,
needed,
I
so
call
you know
that
how
the
it is.
lunch
So.
moment.
Exactly, right? So yeah, so I was like, oh man, I'm about to get like 3 to 4 hours back a week. So I'm hoping to actually get my work done during work, you know, at least some of it. And then my at night writing time, you know, or after school, hopefully I'll get some back. So I totally feel you there. I'm like had to carve out time and take some extra gigs and stuff that were not after, you know, 3 o'clock. So I can, you know, have that 3 to 4 like in the spring every day. So I feel like there's never enough time. Wish you could have a genie and just pause
Yeah.
time, right? Put it out there. Because if you needed a genie, you wouldn't really need a job after that, though, right? But it is what it is. Well, Alan, I really thank you for coming on. This has been great. I think the only book I don't have of yours is your newest one. So I'm trying to work in here. Like I said, I just had a lot of grim dark. So
Yeah, you don't
this
need to
thing of
do that.
darkness. Well, this thing of darkness to me, I was like, I gotta get that. So I got that one on here. So we'll be releasing my reading list, my hope to, you know, hopeful reading list for 2025 in two parts. So I'll tag you in that as well. That way we can get this out there some more for you. But I am really excited. I love Glenn Cook. So I love that type of thing. So Immortal Treachery series is definitely gonna be, you know, one of those things. I love Conan. Robert E. Howard's a great inspiration to me. So I'm definitely excited for that one. But make sure if you're in our audience, you got to double check, you know, everything for the description. Alan's book and social links are below. So please go there and, you know, check everything out. If we could help him out with this thing of darkness, I would love to get a second book. I know already of that. So do your best there. We just want to remind people this is where your reviews come in, whether people are an author, a writer, you know, voice actor, you know, an editor, you know, cover artist, those kind of things. You know, reviewing helps everybody within the creative process and helps us to get more stuff. So please make sure you guys are doing that. That's going to be our thing, and we're going to keep mentioning it and bringing it up. But Alan, other than that, thank you so much for coming on. You know where to find
Thank
me if
you.
you need anything in the meantime. I'll email you, like I said, after this. I'll email you the date for this, you know, release date. And other than that, you know, if there's anything you need in the meantime, you just send it to me and we'll get it out there and help you to the best of our ability. So.
Thanks so much. Had a great time.
Me too. Me too. I look forward to chatting in the future. But other than that, I hope you have a, you know, good rest of the day, my friend, and happy writing.
Yes, thank you.
Yep. See you later.